From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. A true ghost story. The Hunchbacked Ghost Girl of Bristol. In the early 1900s, the widow of a British Army colonel and her three daughters came to live in an elegant house in Bristol. The widow, Mrs. Marsh, had taken a long lease on the house, for the rent was not as much as she had expected. The reason for this she learned only later. The house, which was situated on Upper Belgrave Road, was reputed to be haunted. Even so, Mrs. Marsh reminded herself, haunted or not, the residence was a fine bargain, and she and her children settled in with the intention of staying for some time. From neighbors and other local people, Mrs. Marsh came to find out something about her alleged resident ghost. It was supposed to be the specter of a servant girl who had once lived and worked in the house. Described as horrible and pale-faced, she was said to have been the illegitimate daughter of a rich man who had owned the house a half-century earlier. One old woman who remembered her commented, "The unfortunate creature could not have been uglier. Besides being half-witted, the servant girl had been hunchback, snaggle-tooth, and very sallow face. She always wore a cheap pink dress," the old woman recalled. "The poor thing lived a miserable life, often beaten by her father and half-starved. In the end, you know, she drowned herself in that pool in your garden." After Mrs. Marsh and her daughters had been in the house for a few weeks, the widow found that she had a problem. She was unable to hire a housemaid who would live in. Mrs. Marsh rightly suspected that the reputed ghost was keeping servants away. But as yet, neither she nor her daughters had seen anything of the humpbacked ghost girl. One day, however, as one of the daughters started to go up the stairs, she passed a young girl who was wearing a pink dress. As busy as if her life depended on it, she was vigorously sweeping the stairs with a brush and pan. The widow's daughter, assuming that her mother had hired a temporary maid, hardly gave the sweeping girl a glance. But as she said later, that half-glance had left her with a distinct feeling of repugnance. "You should have seen her," mother commented to daughter. "She was terribly untidy, even slovenly. Her cap was soiled and all askew on her head, and she looked decidedly humpbacked. And her face, it was so white and unhealthy-looking." "It would seem," said Mrs. Marsh Riley, that was probably our ghost girl." The next time the ghost girl was seen by another of the widow's daughters, she too met the apparition on the stairs. The ghost girl was clad in the same pink dress, but this time she seemed aware of the daughter's presence. She grinned hideously as she slithered past the daughter, and was still doing so over her shoulder as she closed the door behind herself. Exactly 1 week later, the widow's third daughter had an encounter with a ghost girl. All alone in the house at the time, the daughter went down to the basement to get some hot water. Returning upstairs, she was dumbfounded when she opened the kitchen to find the hunchbacked figure of the girl in the pink dress. The figure appeared to be busy doing something at the kitchen range with her back toward the daughter. Why, stammered the daughter, "what on earth are you doing here?" The deformed ghost girl whirled around, an impertinent leer on her sallow face. Then, without uttering a word, she scuttled off into an adjoining room. There was no other exit from this room, as the daughter well knew. "And now," muttered the girl, who was a young woman of some spirit, "I'm going to catch you face to face." But when the daughter entered the room, which was the scullery, she found it empty. Of the deformed ghost girl in the pink dress, there was no sign whatsoever. Suddenly, very frightened, the daughter turned and ran up the stairs. On the first landing, she paused a moment to catch her breath. She was horrified to see grinning at her through the window of the landing the white, pallid face of the ghostly housemaid she had seen only a minute ago in the kitchen. Moreover, the landing window happened to be 30 feet above the ground. How I ever got out of that house, she said later, I'll never know, but I did. In fact, she was found by her mother on the porch of the house in a dead faint. So sick did she become afterwards that she was sent to the seashore at Brighton to recover. This took several months. In the meantime, Mrs. March determined to look for another house, one that she and her daughters would not have to share with a ghost. But the ghost girl was seen once more before they moved out. On this occasion, Mrs. Marsh and one of her daughters were having afternoon tea in the parlor. With them was the vicar of a nearby church, Mr. Bates Tucker, who had recently been transferred to Bristol. Neither the woman had mentioned the ghost to Reverend Bates Tucker, and being new in the neighborhood, he presumably knew nothing of it. The clergyman was about to sip his second cup of tea, when the woman saw him set his cup down and stare with astonishment toward the kitchen door. "I say," began Mr. Bates Tucker, "who is that odd-looking person? I thought you ladies lived alone here." The woman looked in the direction Bates Tucker was pointing. There, in the act of passing from the hallway through the open kitchen door, they saw the pink-clad figure of the ghost girl. Just before the apparition disappeared into the kitchen, it swung its head about and leered at the three onlookers. A few seconds later, the ladies and the clergyman searched the kitchen but found no one there. Mrs. Marsh was quite shaken, for it was the first time she had seen the ghost with her own eyes. The women then explained to Reverend Bates Tucker the trouble they had been having and how they were determined to move out of the haunted house. About 3 years after the Marshes vacated the house on Upper Belgrave Road, an English psychic investigator and noted ghost hunter paid it a visit. He subsequently reported that near the front door he caught sight of a disheveled and repulsive-looking little maid servant in a dirty pink dress. The apparition grinned at him, then slipped away through a door at the rear of the house. This researcher further reported that the family moved into the house after the Marshes left, remained less than a month. The tenants after that stayed an even shorter time. Thereafter, the house stood empty, and as the investigator was fond of saying, he was sure it would stay that way except for the apparition of the pink dress. The Hammering Fist of Calvados Chateau in France. Just about everyone in the area knew that the old Norman chateau had been the scene of queer phenomena and the haunting place of malicious ghosts. But when the new owners, the DX family, inherited the small chateau in 1867 and took up residence in it, they had little inkling of just how violent the disturbances were to become. In October, just after the family had moved in, the phenomena began. Nocturnal noises, blows, rappings, and other queer sounds. Then they abruptly ceased for more than 7 years, only to recommence in the year 1875. These ghostly events were well attested to by numerous witnesses. Chief among them was the chateau's owner himself, Monsieur de X, who later agreed to let his Journal of the Disturbances be published in the Annals of Psychic Science for 1893, provided his family's names were not revealed. "The honesty and intelligence of the owner of this chateau," wrote the Annals editor, "cannot be questioned. He himself noted down every day all the extraordinary facts which he and the inhabitants of the chateau witnessed, just as they occurred." When the new disturbances broke out on October 12, 1875, fresh snow stood all over the chateau, yet no footprints were discovered in it anywhere about the grounds. Monsieur de X secretly rigged threads across the doorways and other openings to the building, but he never found them broken. At first, Monsieur de X refused to believe that the strange noises in the chateau were of supernatural origin. He thought they could very well be the work of living people, who, if they could manage to frighten his family sufficiently, would force them to sell the chateau for a song. He therefore conducted a painstaking search of the whole structure from top to bottom. He sounded the walls and the cellars for long-forgotten passageways by which someone might enter, but search as he would, he could find no explanation for the odd noises that now began to intensify. Next, Monsieur de X purchased two huge watchdogs that were released every night to patrol the grounds. One day the animal set up such a loud barking around the thicket that Monsieur de X was sure his enemies were hiding within it. He and several of his servants surrounded the tiny woods and released the dogs. The animals rushed into the woods, but almost immediately their barks turned to plaintive whines, as if they were being scolded by an invisible master. They soon emerged from the thicket with their tails between their legs. Although the thicket was thoroughly searched, no one at all was found there. Living at this time in the chateau was a Catholic priest, Father Y, who was employed as a tutor to the owner's son. During the next months, most of the disturbances took place in the priest's room. The first thing Father Y noticed amiss was that his armchair had switched places one evening. He reported this to the owner and his wife, who then accompanied him to his chamber. A thorough search revealed nothing out of the ordinary. Monsieur de X then hit on the idea of attaching a piece of gum paper to the armchair, fixing it to the floor. He and his wife then returned to their own quarters, telling Father Y to call if anything happened. About 10 o'clock that night, the priest heard a series of raps that, while faint, were still loud enough so that the maid, Amelina, heard them in the next room. Next, the priest heard a noise like the winding of a large clock in the corner of the room, followed by the grating sound of a candlestick being moved along the mantelpiece. Finally, the frightened priest was sure he saw his armchair start to move. Not daring to get out of bed, Father Y reached for his bell rope and gave it a yank. A few minutes later, Monsieur de X entered the room, tried to calm the clergyman, and began checking the objects in the chamber. He found that the armchair had indeed been moved back about a yard, the gummed paper had been torn, and it was also facing in a different direction. A statuette near the mirror had advanced some 9 inches. The candlesticks had been shifted. About 20 minutes later, after the owner had once again gone to bed, the priest heard two vicious blows strike resoundingly on the door of his wardrobe. Whatever was causing the disturbances in the chateau soon developed new techniques. Pieces of furniture were heard being lugged about on upper floors, then dropped with devastating thuds. The owners were amazed to hear footsteps in upper rooms, and even spoken conversations resembling their own. Amelina once swore she heard her master and mistress's voice when both were in a far part of the chateau. The savage hammering blows continued for many days, but although many tours of inspection were conducted, they turned up nothing. As the days passed, Monsieur de X was forced to face the fact that he was up against something deadly supernatural. He invited friends and clergymen to witness the strange events occurring in the chateau. These people would come, spend a night or two, and often leave in haste, for the hammering blows grew unbearably loud and strident. One night everyone was awakened by the sound of a large ball bouncing downstairs, one step after another. Heavy running noises were heard in the upper corridors. On another night, someone was heard dashing up the stairs with apparently superhuman speed. After this event, the whole chateau was shaken with violent blows, as if a big log or an anvil had been flung to the floor. No one in the great feudal house could pinpoint where these blows came from, nor could anyone sleep on that night. 4 days later, there was a repeat performance, the bouncing ball, the sickening blows shaking the walls nearly to pieces, the rushing footsteps. And there was something new, the quick padding about of an animal. The following night, Auguste, the gardener, summoned his master to listen to a long series of taps where he slept. He and Monsieur de X made thorough inspections of the part of the chateau, but found nothing. After they left, the noises began again. The next night, some being was heard to rush at top speed up the main staircase to the first floor. The sounds of these treads had nothing human about them. Everybody in the chateau heard them. It was as if two legs, deprived of their feet, were stalking about on their stumps. The hideous noises continued to rock the feudal structure. By mid-November, galloping sounds began to be heard on the stairs, together with heavy thuddings, as if someone were beating on the chateau's doors. Once a series of 40 raps was heard, lasting nearly 3 minutes. On one particularly bad night, with a storm howling outside, a long, drawn-out trumpet call was heard, even above the storm. A short while later, nearly everyone heard two ghastly shrieks, as if a woman in agony were pleading for help. 2 nights after that, more plaintive cries were heard, coming from the main hall, followed by stifled moans from the cellar. Then after midnight, everyone could hear the pitiful sobs of a woman undergoing some horrible suffering. Even though Father Y always locked in his room and kept the key with him, he would return to find closed windows open again and furniture moved into odd positions. One time his bed was found on its side with a table pushed under it. Another time the table was on top of the bed. Once the priest heard a broom, apparently sweeping all by itself, outside his room. When Monsieur de X investigated, the room was not in its proper place. The owner then attempted to solve the priest's open window problem by nailing the frame shut. Later it was found to be open again, with the nails torn out, and no trace of any stool that could have been used. In addition, the priest soon became accustomed to finding his shoes, lamp, and water bottle perched in ridiculous positions when he entered his room. 2 days after Christmas, 1875, Monsieur de X entered Father Y's room and found most of his books, at least 100 of them, strewn all over the floor. On top of a pile of devotional books was a broom. Only 3 volumes remained on the shelves, books of the Holy Scriptures. Meanwhile, the nightly hammering, galloping, knocking, thudding, and other unearthly sounds continued to thunder through the chateau. There seemed to be no relief from them. One day both Father Y and Madame de X heard a noise in the priest's chamber. Going to investigate, Madame de X put out her hand to open the door latch when suddenly the key turned all by itself in the lock, detached itself, and hit her other hand a sharp blow. Of the violent hammerings on their doors at night, Monsieur de X wrote in his diary, "To acquire some idea of their violence, one must imagine a wall collapsing, or a horse or a cannonball being thrown against the door. It would be no exaggeration." Simultaneously, prolonged walking and running could be heard on upstairs floors, strange steps that were often quite unlike human ones. "No animal," wrote the master of the chateau, "could walk like that. It was more like a stick jumping on one of its ends." These eerie sounds were heard by everyone, master, mistress, guests, and servants alike. Subsequent psychic investigators who later learned of this famous case often wondered how the De X family endured these nerve-shattering disturbances for so long. Yet they did. Day after day, through the month of January, Monsieur de X's diary bristles with meticulous accounts of how many blows were struck, when precisely they occurred, and exactly how many minutes they lasted. Soon the ghostly presence started to mock everyone in the morning when they came downstairs for breakfast. Every footstep the person took would be matched with a rap until he or she reached the ground floor. If the person stopped, the raps would also stop. Once a clergyman was asked to stay at the chateau for the purpose of exorcising the troublesome spirit. All during his visit, which lasted several days, the ghostly presence remained respectful and quiet. But the day this churchman left, there broke out a whole new set of phenomena, more boisterous than before. Prolonged stampeding noises were heard nearly every night in the upstairs rooms. The rolling, bouncing balls continued their mysterious progress down the stairs and through the corridors, never seen but clearly heard. Dull knocks, rhythmic rappings, shrill cries, weird drummings, frantic running noises, dragging footsteps, all continued to make life miserable for those living in the mansion. Deafening bellows and furious shouts added to the nightly din. Occasionally the entire chateau would be shaken by terrible blows delivered by what sounded like superhuman fists on the heavy outside doors. Sometimes they came with such machine-gun-like rapidity that it was impossible for the meticulous Monsieur de X to count them. Yet nothing and no one was ever seen by anyone. Then on one beautiful day, Father X was reading in his chamber when suddenly a cascade of water poured down the chimney into his fire, extinguishing it and scattering ashes all about the room. The unfortunate priest's face was covered with soot, and he was temporarily blinded. 3 days later, on January 28, 1876, everybody heard the voice of a man in one of the back quarters. Twice it cried, "Ha ha!" Immediately afterward were struck exactly 10 resounding reports that rocked the whole mansion. Then there were choking, coughing noises. A search revealed a broken earthenware plate in front of Madame de X's door. It was broken in exactly 10 places. No one had ever seen it in the chateau before. That same night, another priest, who had been summoned a few days previously, conducted more rites of exorcism. He also had arranged to have a novena mass said at the Holy Shrine of Lourdes to supplement his own efforts to lay the ghost. This priest's rites reached their climax about the time the coughing noises were heard. The latter may conceivably have represented the ghost's death rattle. For Monsieur de X's diary reads, "The Reverend Father had completed his exorcism, and everything has stopped." But had it? True, a great calm set in over the chateau for a time, but the owner's joy in it was short-lived. More was yet to come. 3 days later, Madame de X was writing at her desk, when suddenly an immense collection of medals and crosses clattered down in front of her. Part of the exorcism rites, these holy trinkets, had been placed on all the doors of the chateau in an effort to ward off the troublesome spirit. Yet until then, they had all mysteriously disappeared from the doors the day after they had been placed on them. Mercifully, all remained peaceful that winter and spring and into the summer. Then, toward the end of August, muffled knockings and other noises began to be heard again. Unusually loud knocks were heard in the linen room. One night in September, a great shuffling noise was heard in the main drawing room, which at that time was locked. When the owner unlocked the door and entered it, he found the couch and armchairs had all been moved from their usual locations. Now they were arranged as if for a council meeting, horseshoe fashion, with the couch in the middle. As one eyewitness later wrote, the devil had had his counsel. A little while later, Monsieur de X, probably to compose himself, played for a long while on his small organ. When he had finished and closed up the instrument, some of the melodies he had been playing were repeated note for note in the room for a considerable time. Some months earlier, the terrified Father Y had left the chateau, and the owner engaged another tutor for his son. This new clergyman was not to escape a bit of mischief from the ghost. While Monsieur de X was away on a trip, the priest heard the organ playing tunes all by itself. When the owner returned, the priest reported this odd occurrence to him. "But," protested Monsieur de X, "I have the key to the organ here in my pocket." It was true the instrument had been locked for 3 days. Even though the Calvados phenomena grew progressively weaker, Monsieur de X by this time had had enough of the diabolical spirit. He sold his bedeviled chateau and went to live elsewhere, this time in peace. But the Calvados chateau case lives on the annals of ghostdom as one of the most remarkable hauntings ever documented by persons of unquestioned integrity. The most intense period of the poltergeist activity began on October 12, 1875, and lasted until January 30, 1876, after which it tapered off and finally ceased. Well over 100 separate events were recorded during this period, a high number for a case of just about 3.5 months' duration. Furthermore, they occurred with almost regular frequency, either on successive days or with only a few days' break between occurrences.